from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you into the 9 o'clock hour we go.
Am I allowed to drink at the VFW?
I don't know.
My wife's hometown, the only bar is a little VFW. But I think people go. I think you can be a member.
Okay.
Like if one of the veterans like brings sponsors you or something. So text in everybody. 713-572-4610.
You're a veteran, text in. And in advance, we thank you for your service as well.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not trying to steal valor or anything.
No.
I'm not gonna walk in and be like, I was a 3-star general. Now give me a drink.
I'm telling you what's going to happen. You're about to get invited to like 5 VFWs in the Houston area.
I can't keep up with those guys.
Just telling you. That's what's about to happen. When you wanted to do Krav Maga earlier this year. Yeah. Krav Maga or Krav Maga?
Krav Maga.
Krav Maga. Okay, so I had it right the first time. You had several invites to go in and do that if you wanted to.
I'll go hang out with the veterans, and they'll be telling their stories. And I'll be like, oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you about the time we didn't have Gatorade for almost half a practice. It was pretty rough. I was down in the stuff, as they say. Yep.
You got way better stories than I would have in there.
Did
I tell you about the time they ran out of paper in the printers back in the day when I was in sales? Did I tell you about the time that there was a client that said they were going to do business with me and then they didn't?
Yeah.
And it was really hurtful.
It was hurtful. The customer was really mean to me.
He was mean to me.
You know,
he
you
told
guys
me
have
one
your
thing.
Drill sergeant stories, but yeah.
Did another, yeah.
This guy said he was going to buy something.
Yeah. Jerk. Lewis Riddick again, man. Lewis Riddick off the top rope on behalf of the Houston Texans, man.
Yeah. A man that could have reason to have sour grapes over the Texans because he was talked about as a potential GM candidate.
Could have been a petty cast. He could have petty casted the Houston Texans and been very petty about that. He was, as Seth said, he was in the running to get the job that ended up going to Nick Caserio. I think most Texan fans are very happy it played out the way they did because the Texans are on their way to good things. But Lewis Riddick, man, like I almost feel like he's got a spiel now about the Texans. Mm-hmm. This was yesterday on one of the morning shows. I think Get Up or First Take or one of them, man. Lewis Riddick, they were talking about the Texans again. They were talking about teams that can challenge the Kansas City Chiefs. Here was Lewis Riddick.
Here's the key, though, for me, why they're going to take the next step. D'Amico Ryans is one of the best leaders we've ever seen in the NFL. He's one of the best leaders in the NFL as a player. He will go down when it's all said and done as one of the best head coaches in history in terms of his leadership ability. The guy commands everyone that he comes into contact with. Not in a threatening way, not in a I'm bigger, better, stronger than you way, but in a competency way. You feel his competence. You feel the impact that he has on you in terms of how he makes you feel. And he's doing that for that franchise. I would have not bet on the Texans to be as good as they were last year. I would have bet my whole life savings on it and lost everything because I underestimated, wrongfully, just how strong that man is. The Texans are for real. And even though everybody knows they're coming this year, they're still going to do what they need to do.
Dude, that sounds almost exactly like the quote we played from him last week. Like, where D'Amico is one of the best leaders in the history of football.
Yeah.
Feel his leadership.
And it's tough because, you know, how I felt this way when I was talking about D'Amico, and people had understandable objections, like valid arguments about hiring a defensive coach. I get that. I philosophically differ with people. But as far as when you hire a head coach, I think first and foremost, you can't worry about whether he's offensive-minded or defensive-minded. First and foremost, you want to know, A, is he a genuine leader? And it's hard when you're hiring coordinators to know for sure, because they've never been in that role before. These days, most guys have not been a head coach by the time they get elevated to be a head coach in the NFL. And when I would endorse D'Amico and his personality and his leadership qualities, it's hard to explain or expect people to believe you, because it just sounds like the things that people do say all the time. So I was put in a position of almost feeling like I had to grab people and shake them and say, no, you're not getting it. It's real this time. He's just different when it comes to all those harder to define elements, whether you want to call it factor or what have you. The one thing I was thinking about the other day was, with D'Amico, when he starts getting some of the tests that you have as a head coach, a down season or a season where you don't meet expectations, firing your assistant coaches, all of those, he hasn't necessarily genuinely been tested, although the Texans did swap out defensive line coaches this year, kind of under the radar, and it wasn't very notable or anything. So I think some of that, I don't know exactly how it all happened or anything, but some of the coaching staff changes, it might have already been that guys were either let go or not retained, and it was a difficult conversation to have. But those are the things that guys that have never had to do that before are now in a position of having to do, and you just never know how they're going to react and respond in those situations.
Think about previous Texans head coaches, and not Lovie Smith and David Culley, because they themselves got fired after a year. But go back to Bill O'Brien. Like, Bill O'Brien's probably first big test like that was having to fire George Godsey.
Yeah.
Someone who he had history with. Mm-hmm. And he was an offensive coordinator for an offense that wasn't doing anything. I think back to Gary Kubiak. Like, his first big one was probably twice, where he fired Richard Smith and then he fired Frank Bush. You know, he, for five years, until they got Wade Phillips in there, could not find a defensive coordinator.
Right.
That was his big challenge.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. And it was.
D'Amico hasn't
really
had
was.
That yet. You're
and
right.
I think, well, you talk about the hazards of hiring a guy based on a coordinator. I think that Kubiak had to grow into the role of head coach, because I think he was very much involved in the offense and wanted to. It always felt to me like, yeah, he wanted to be able to just have a defensive coordinator who handled the defense and everything. And just over time, you have to evolve into that guy that is the motivator
CEO, and man. The
driver of the entire team.
Yeah. I feel like D'Amico's there.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I know he's a defensive guy and whatnot, but I feel like he's there.
I think part of it is that just really encouraging an atmosphere where the offense and the defense are helping each other by talking nuts and bolts about it. It's notable. It's really notable to the degree to which they do it, because it's not always like that on NFL teams. And I think then it happens naturally, because everybody's involved on the other side of the ball. The defense is competing against the offense, but also trying to give their tips and their recommendations for how they could be doing things differently. So it naturally happens that way.
How about this quote from Aziz Alshire? If you're looking to kind of get a feel for what the culture has been established here, what it is, the article, it was by DJ Bieniemy, had an article just talking about how D'Amico's attitude and ethos have rubbed off on all aspects of this team and organization. Here was what Aziz Alshire said in this article. He said, everybody can't just play here. You might be a playmaker, but if you're soft, you might need to go somewhere else. You might make it in the league, but you won't make it here. There's a standard. If you're not reaching the standard, you just won't be here. There's been plenty of great players, but some don't play the style that we play, and that's okay. You'll have a job. It just won't be here.
Yeah.
Get with it or get lost. End quote.
Yeah. It's fun. It's a lot more fun if you can win a Super Bowl and then talk that
way.
Yeah,
for sure.
I believe it. I believe that that's true.
It is what it
and
looks like
they,
defensively.
Right. Now they just got to deliver on it.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. I was thinking about this, too, yesterday. Ben, let's play that highlight of Derek Stingley Jr. and that interception on Saturday against Daniel Jones.
Jones in the gun. He's got time, and he airs it out deep down the right side, and Stingley has a pick inside the five-yard line. Derek Stingley Jr. with the interception. There was no way he was going to be denied the pass intended for Jalen Hyatt.
When J.J. Watt was an elite player here, when he was winning Defensive Player of the Year awards, and I'm not saying Stingley is at J.J. Watt's level yet, but he's got that type of potential to win a Defensive Player of the Year and be a multi-time All-Pro. The big thing about J.J. was his teammates would get asked about him all the time in press conferences, right?
Yeah. It got annoying. It was like every time anybody got up to speak, the first question was like, what's it like playing with J.J. Watt?
Right. Or can you believe what J.J. did in the game on Sunday or whatever? But it's a reality. It happened. Stingley's getting a little bit of that now. Mm-hmm. You know, like Stingley, on the heels of the season or the half a season he had at the end of last year, and then making plays like he has throughout camp. He's been their best defensive player in camp so far. The play that you guys saw him make that you just heard right there are plays that he's been making routinely at the practices that Seth and I have been to. He's been great in camp. Here's Will Anderson talking about Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah, we benefit a lot. I was telling Stingley, I was like, bro, you still want me to play on your side? Because we had got the deal, and we was joking about that. And I said, bro, like, he's unbelievable, bro. And to see him work every day, to see him come in, he's quiet, he doesn't say much. But when you turn the tape on, you just see him, like, everywhere. Having a guy like that in the back, it makes our job so much easier just to go hunt, be free, and be loose. Because it's like, they throw the Stingley, they crazy. So having a guy back there like that, man, it's really a blessing.
Okay, so this is the thing. Like, if you fear that somehow it'll get to the point where people are just always being asked about Derek Stingley all the time. The thing about with JJ was that JJ was a master at the social media game, and really, for a guy that was playing on an expansion team in the AFC South, like, if he had a Danielle Hunter type of personality, it wouldn't have been as fixated upon by the public at large in the media.
Stingley's got a Danielle Hunter personality.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, part of it was JJ was masterful and maybe one of the first, athletes that really knew how to work social media and really knew how to play it all up and everything. Danielle Hunter's the opposite of that. Danielle Hunter doesn't necessarily get a whole lot of credit for how good he is. You combine with that JJ was a three-time defensive player of the year.
For sure.
So, I do think that personality and just publicity matters a lot. So I don't think people are going to get sick of talking about Derek Stingley.
Yeah, I think the questions are going to keep coming, though, man, especially as Stingley's on this ascent right now.
The thing about Derek Stingley that's so cool is that, again, it wasn't a well-thrown ball, obviously, but in that interception, I feel like Daniel Jones might have been thinking he was going to try to throw a back shoulder. And I saw somebody complete a back shoulder pass this weekend where I thought, yeah, that's the difference between Derek Stingley and other defensive backs is the ball skills. The understanding of when to turn and look, his ability to actually make the play on the ball.
There's a receiver out there.
You can't back shoulder Derek Stingley. It's the dumbest thing you could do. You're throwing up. It's not just an incompletion. It's an interception.
That's right. It's a punt, basically.
Yeah.
Here's Kamari Lassiter, who I would imagine is learning a lot from playing with Derek Stingley right now. Rookie cornerback who's in all likelihood going to start on the opposite corner from Stingley. Here's Lassiter yesterday talking about Stingley.
Second to none, honestly. I haven't seen a defensive back have as good as ball skills as he has. Like, it's just like a superpower of his. Like, he's just able to just snatch it up out the air. Like, it's just something that you really can't teach. You can't coach that. That's something that God blessed him with. And, he uses it all the time. And it's just crazy to watch. I'm like, hey, that Sting right there. I told him on the side, I'm like, yeah, like, you that one for sure.
Think they ever use him as a wide receiver?
Is Stingley?
A gimmick or a gadget or anything? Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah. I don't think they should.
No. Well, not a guy with injury issues.
Not on this team either right now. I guess.
Yeah, you don't need right.
Down the line, if they were thinner at wide receiver, I could see them just here and there maybe.
They got injuries going into a Super Bowl or a playoff game or something like that where you're like, man.
When you spring it on somebody and they don't know, they've got their rules for maybe their number one cornerback's tracking the number one receiver.
I like that.
Stingley just slides onto the field and it's enough of a change, but a viable and legitimate threat.
I like that.
You catch him off guard. Yeah. You end up with Derek Stingley on the nickelback. Yeah, I could see that.
text message. This goes back to our VFW conversation, Seth. We had a few people weigh in.
I was curious about whether I can drink at the VFW.
Drink at the
not.
VFW, yeah. Any VFW is a text message. Any VFW I've been to does not require membership.
Oh, okay, okay.
Now, it also says, now it's funny. I glanced at the text page, and I saw $90,000 per year. And I'm like, well, for the VFW?
that's the guy.
That's the guy talking about college.
Oh, yeah.
I was glancing at the wrong text. Okay, this is kind of mean. Text message, no one in the VFW is young enough to know how to text you guys.
Come on. Do younger vets not go to the VFW?
I don't know.
We've got quite a few veterans of foreign wars these days.
We do. Yeah. Yes.
It's been a spell now that we've had veterans.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you. So yeah, someone says Stingley is this generation's Andre Johnson, number 3 overall pick, unbelievable talent. Quiet guy.
Quiet guy.
Personality wise, where he was picked, yes. Stingley's got a lot more.
That's a good point. He's a very quiet, not seeking the spotlight or anything at all.
Unassuming.
Yeah. That part's nice too. Except it's hard sometimes because you feel like you don't get to know the guy.
Andre's
a
better interview than Stingley. Okay. Andre was quiet, but I thought Andre always gave really good answers in interviews. He just did it at a noise level that was like, you know, 2 on the volume knob.
Yeah.
You know?
Stingley, what I like about Stingley is he seems like that guy that just wants to work at football.
I think that's why Nick Caserio liked him so much.
He's he nerds out on football and just that's all he wants to do in life. Like a Kawhi Leonard or something, you know, just he's got no taste or appetite for all the other stuff. He just wants to play football.
No. He likes video games too.
Does he?
He does. Yeah, he talks about playing on Madden or the college football game.
Yeah.
Someone asked him at one of his press conferences, "Hey, you played NCAA 2025 yet?" He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm LSU man. Yeah, hell yeah."
I gotta start playing more video games.
No.
No, I do.
Don't.
That's why all these young quarterbacks understand coverages so well. It's reps. You know, from an early age. They have to learn it at a higher level eventually, but a lot of the automatic of like knowing where all the soft spots are in various coverages and everything.
Dude, they've got this fantasy football ticker going on ESPN today around all their programming, and they just showed the Texans are the ones in the ticker right now. So they're showing like the average draft position for all the different skill players on the Texans. They showed a graphic for the Texans' strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, so how hard if you draft a Texan, like, what, you know, how hard are the opponents they're going up against? So they have week 1 through 14, and then when the fantasy playoffs would be, which are usually 15 on, and they have graphics for it, and the Texans have like the darkest shade of red, and it says very hard.
Chiefs, very, the Ravens.
Very hard. Yeah. It'd be weeks 15, 16, and 17. So it would be the Dolphins, the Chiefs, and the Ravens.
Yeah. As long as Mike McDaniel keeps being nice to Tua. The whole way through.
Yeah.
It's established. Tua doesn't like coaches when they're not nice to him.
Again. That was a good conversation. We got to play Tua again between now and the end of the show. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's circle back to the Astros. How we feeling? 5 games up on the Mariners. Why I think last night's win was really, I think, something that has me more enthusiastic than any of the other wins during this recent streak in August. And if you watch the game, you're probably going, what the hell did you like about that, Sean? Well, I'll tell you. Coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges. and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Thanks, Seth. Now Stingley's going to walk into D'Amico's office to discuss load management like Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, yeah, I made a Kawhi Leonard. I think in terms of personality, where Kawhi doesn't seem all very that interested so. In like living the life of an NBA superstar.
Right.
I mean, he does, you know, he goes out and everything, but he's just not... he feels like a throwback in a lot of ways, except for that part of it.
Yeah.
The load management part of it is a little bit different.
Oh, I jumped on the bump in here, Ben. Sorry about that. Let's hear the highlights from last night's Astros game.
Mauricio's had some big hits for the Astros.
As he lines one into left field, this could tie the game. Here comes Chaz. No throw. We're tied up at four. Doobie does it again.
Doobie. Here's Yiner Diaz.
Yiner hits one high. Ball. Game. His way back to the dugout, and Yiner crushed one for the winner.
Hey, bartender, I need a little extra in this one. What a beautiful Yiner bomb.
Man, I'm not going to lie. Callis' walk-off calls have been on point this year.
Yeah.
He's really good on those.
Yeah.
Oh, game.
Yeah.
Over. Good job, Todd Callis.
Good job, Todd Callis. Yeah. Also pointing out that Yordan had said something to Yiner on his way to the plate.
Right before the swing.
Right. So, and Yordan had struck out on three pitches, very uncharacteristically, but saw something.
Against Astros pitching machine, Kenley Jansen.
Kenley Jansen, I get so happy when I see him come out. Kenley Jansen looked like he knew his fate.
A little overwhelmed.
He's got a 5+ ERA versus the Astros. You go back to Dubon having the big hit. Like, it's, yeah. Kenley Jansen is not an Astros killer.
No, he's the opposite.
Yeah.
He's a golf tee. Just tee off on him, man. There were two big things I liked about this win last night. A win that, while it was going on, I thought, man, even if they win this game, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this. This is some sloppy baseball. Uncharacteristically sloppy, though, and I think that's the big thing. Number one, I'll get to the sloppiness in a second. But Yusei Kikuchi kind of keeping his wits about himself. Not that he's... you know, like bad Framber or something
right,
like that.
Right,
Kikuchi
right.
strikes me as a pretty calm guy. But the fact that he was delivered so much clutter on the base paths, it was not his fault. And that he was able to keep making big pitches was really helped out by two double plays, one in the third, one in the fourth. Here was Joe Espada after the game on Yusei Kikuchi's performance.
Credit to Kikuchi. He kept making pitches. He got two big double plays, one in the third, one in the fourth. He didn't let those mistakes affect him, and he got big outs when he needed to, and our offense just kept pushing, and we just kept getting big at-bats, big hits.
Well, if you think about the Astros fielding, they're one of the best fielding teams in baseball. They're kind of like a really good quarterback who throws three picks in a game. You know that quarterback at least can make up for it.
Yeah.
So, likewise, with the Astros fielding, they get you know, a really bad error at third base out of Whitcomb. But like, okay, that's what you're gonna get when you got a non-Bregman call up right there.
Pena had another error,
right? Yeah, I mean, you've got a catcher playing first.
Yeah.
So Altuve gets an error that back in the Yuli days wouldn't have been. Yuli bailed a lot of guys out back in the day because he was just a hoover at first base.
Yeah.
But like,
Well, Yiner, this one was a high throw.
I know.
Yiner couldn't get to because he's short.
Yeah. But Yuli would have probably gotten that out.
Oh, for sure.
So. Yeah, despite all that, they're able to make up for it with their fielding in the same game.
Well, and then the catcher who's playing, you know, the guy who's playing catcher for you instead of Yiner, sails an easy one to first base, Caratini. So they know what they did wrong. We don't have to harp on it, but that's the second thing for me, Seth. Like, this team brought its C-minus game, and they were helped out by the Red Sox. Certainly those first two runs were helped out by the Red Sox throwing the ball all over the park.
It was sloppy on both sides.
Sloppy on both sides. No. The Red Sox are not a good defensive team, so they were characteristically sloppy. The Astros were uncharacteristically sloppy. But I think when you bring your C-minus game like they did last night, they weren't great offensively either, and you win the game, sign of a good team, man. Sign of a good team. And they've won 11 out of their last 12.
It's just you look around the AL, and as the Mariners lose last night and the Astros are 5 games up on the Mariners now, the Astros are in a really good stretch when just about all of the other contenders are on a 5-5 stretch. The top two teams in every division is 5-5 or worse, other than the Astros, who are 9-1 in their last 10 games and overall whatever that is on the stretch right now.
Yeah. They've won 11 out of 12.
Yeah. So this has been a really good couple weeks for the Astros.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Really, it's not just what they're doing, it's that the rest of the league is kind of hit the August doldrums.
Well, in the division, too. Yeah. AL West team record since May 1st. The Astros have the best record in Major League Baseball. If you pick any juncture from, like, late April, really from the time they were 12-24 on, if you pick any date, chances are the Astros have the best record since whatever date that is.
Yeah, and it's been with two huge stretches. The first, when they reclaimed legitimacy, a lot of that was based on a lot of offense that you don't think is necessarily sustainable. This one feels more real because you're getting really good pitching as well. And the Kikuchi is here now, a guy that wasn't there. Verlander's coming back, so they're going to be able to go to a 6-man rotation. And all of that feels very sustainable.
Yes.
All that you feel, okay, I can project this out. And I don't need ridiculous run production all the time. We can win close games. We can even win games where we're sloppy. Kikuchi making that great play where he scooped the ball back to Caratini to get an out at home on a fielder's choice was really nice.
That was big. It was cool to see Yiner get that home run, too, because in the bottom of the seventh, we haven't talked about this, he got called out for calling a timeout a second time in an at-bat with 2 strikes. And a lot of Astro fans are really angry about that. You know, they're like, hey, thanks, Blue. Blue being the umpire. Like, thanks. Real great way to end a dramatic inning in a close game. It's like, man, like,
that's just
Yiner's
rule,
calling
that's
a second time out. Like, it's one thing you can fudge the pitch clock a little bit, you know, but like if the
there's
dude.
There's no judgment there. That's
no,
only,
it's a quantity. It's 2 and you only get 1.
Yeah. It's like if you call a timeout as a football coach and you're out of timeouts, you're going to get dinged for it.
Penalty. Yeah. Sorry about that. So, interesting take on the text page. Keeping Bregman looks more and more important. And I'm sure that's a reference to Shea Whitcomb's error last night. Yeah, you get an appreciation. I've said this all along about Bregman, man. Like, that's the part. If Bregman's gone after this year, and I still think that's the favorite, defensively is where I think, you know, we take him for granted sometimes.
You know what,
he makes a lot of plays look easy.
Right. And he gives competitive at-bats, even in his long slumps and whatever. There's a lot that he brings. I think the biggest thing that the Texans have, that the Astros have working against them in retaining any of their free agents that are a part of that core of championships, is that there's so many teams out there that genuinely look at it as, all right, the playoff experience really matters. Like, we need a guy. Just as the Astros brought in veteran players in 2017 because they really felt like, all right, we need a Carlos Beltran. We need
Josh Reddick.
We need guys that just flat out have experience and be good mentors, even keels, all that.
McCann.
McCann especially.
Yeah.
I think teams out there, like the Twins, look at guys like Carlos Correa as like, okay, yeah, it's not just the production. It's with Correa especially, because in the playoffs he's been extremely good as a player in the playoffs.
A player and a leader.
And like incredibly consistent as a player in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But then also that little extra lanyap to add on to it. That's what teams are going to look at is Bregman. And it goes back to, I was having a discussion with somebody earlier on the text line about what the Texans might command for Davis Mills in a trade. And everybody, like, he's like, that's crazy. He's not that good, blah, blah, blah. Listen, you know what? You can't have arguments about what's rational or what's right. Was the Bill O'Brien trade a rational, good trade?
The DeAndre Hopkins, you mean.
Right, which Bill O'Brien executed.
Oh, okay, yeah, I just didn't know what you
meant. When I say the Bill O'Brien trade, it's the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
Gotcha.
That's a trade that happened in the NFL.
Yes.
Bad trades, irrational trades, free agency spendings, they happen. So you can't sit and think, well, I know what Alex Bregman should be worth, so no, the Astros will be able to pay that. Some other team's going to pay a lot more than you might be willing to pay.
Yeah, and Bregman is an interesting player, because I've long said this. He is a player who's worth way more to a good team than he is to a mediocre team.
Especially if they're trying to get over the hump.
Over the hump. Yeah, absolutely. Like, the little things he does to win games resonate. I don't know why it is, but it just resonates, and it matters so much more. Like, you know, you can talk about sports and like, okay, the difference between an 85-win team and a 93-win team is probably a handful of plays throughout the season, like the 8 to 10 wins. Those are the plays Bregman makes. You know, those are the defensive plays he makes. Those are the at-bats that, as you pointed out, Seth, he's working walks. Even when he's only batting 240, he's still giving good competitive at-bats. There's still always the potential, as we saw right before he went out with his elbow injury, that there's some pop for about a week or two as well, where his OPS is 13 or 1400. He's a really good baseball player, man. And a good team with a budget, a big budget, is going to pay for Alex Bregman. Now, I don't know that the big thing will be the years.
Yeah.
You know, he'll be 31 now. He ain't getting a 10-year deal. I don't know if he's getting an 8-year deal.
He's notoriously prone to sleeping on his arm wrong now.
Which we've learned. That, maybe that helps the Astros
aside
out.
From injuries, it's also,
If it's 6 years, if that's the number, if it's 6 years, because 5's the most they've gone.
Mm.
Do you do 6 years for market value for Bregman?
I think Crane showed a bit of sentimentality in giving the extension to Jose Altuve.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they did that in a really smart fashion. It's Altuve's making a lot less money in the last few years of that deal.
$10 million a year each the last 2 years.
I don't think Bregman would accept a structure like that. I don't think he's still... I don't think Bregman would accept a deal that was like 6 years but modified somehow. I think that Bregman's going to be the consummate business.
For two reasons. One, Bregman's younger than Altuve. He still views himself as, and he is, in his prime. Yeah. Whereas Altuve, 34. He's about to be 35. He knows which way the wind's blowing. Two, I just think Jose Altuve wants to be here more than maybe any other Astro that's entering contract.
Yeah.
I think Bregman's open to playing somewhere else. Altuve, I think, wanted to end his career as an Astro.
I could see part of it. Like, I have no idea about, you know, Altuve and how he actually feels about everything. But for Altuve, who was unfairly made the face of the being better than everybody else scandal by ESPN and other outlets, I think he's a guy where does it not seem to you like Altuve is a guy that is comfortable where he is and likes the love and everything and just the feel being in this organization his entire career? Bregman's a little bit more of a he's got a cold-blooded side to him. I don't think he minds being the villain.
No.
I don't think there's any part of him that's like, you know, that I don't know. And I'm not saying it in a negative way at all. I think he's just a little bit more calculating.
I think early in his career, for sure.
Yeah.
I feel like the heel version of Bregman has been dialed back a little bit the last couple years, but it's still in there somewhere. I'm with you on that.
What's his son's name, Bregman's son?
Knox.
Knox. So your wife, Amy, had a really good joke yesterday. She wondered.
Theory, yeah.
What'd she say?
She said that maybe Bregman hurt his elbow. Maybe Knox, during batting practice, bounced one off of Bregman's elbow.
Just like,
kid's 2 years old.
Like 78, but you're not expecting it. Boom.
His kid can play.
I know.
For a 2 year old.
Is Bregman, most athletes don't push their kids all that hard. They just kind of feel like, okay, if that's what they're into, that's what they like. You know, like that. They don't. I feel like. You think Bregman might be a little bit more...
Knox has had a glove in his crib since the time he got home from the hospital.
A little bit more Earl Woods about it, though? Or do you think he'll put pressure on him? Or do you think he'll...
Good question. Man, I don't want to put negative parenting on anybody. Just put it this way. I would bet a lot of money...
Negative with Earl? It's not negative as long as it works out.
No, that's... Yeah.
Capriati's dad.
Right, yeah. That's... but Tiger loved it. You know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you reach the breaking point where the kid doesn't love it anymore, I don't want to put
you gotta give potential him some space.
That Bregman would do that. I just feel very confident that, you know, like, I feel very confident, like, 11 years from now, we'll be watching Knox Bregman in the Little League World Series in this studio.
Knox seems like the kind of kid, my nephew is like this, that is just naturally all about sports.
Yeah.
Like, my little nephew, who's 3 years old now, just,
he loves it.
They can't take him to, like, volleyball games sometimes because he's, like, screaming because he wants to be out on the court playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. His mom's a volleyball coach and everything, and so he gets to play with it all the time. Baseball, if he sees any kind of a ball on a TV screen, he's just stopped. And he's watching it with a much better attention span than me watching baseball.
I love that.
So I feel like Knox might be a kid like
that. I think he is. Yeah. I think he is. All right. Tua Tagovailoa took it to Brian Flores during an interview on the Dan Le Batard show. Have we had anything resembling this with the Houston Texans? I can think of at least one example. We'll let you hear it coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Do you buy that Clint Sterner doesn't know the meaning of the word turnkey? I don't know what spot he was doing, but he...
It was for his construction company, for his contractor. Yeah,
yeah.
It's turnkey.
So he's I didn't even know what that meant.
I think he probably meant in terms of contracting. Didn't know what it would have meant necessarily.
Yeah.
I think he knew what the phrase turnkey meant.
You sure?
Do you think Clint might start going around like that'll become his new pet phrase?
Turnkey?
But he uses it inaccurately. I want him to start using it inaccurately. Just like, they got a turnkey solution for this, and that's the draft really well over the next 5 years. they gotta be sure to, you know,
come in every day and work really hard.
Yeah.
Every day for 365
decades.
Right.
Turnkey solution.
Turnkey solution. I'm here for that. I'm excited to do our first crosstalk with the new in the loop with Reginald Atatula.
Yeah, I like Reginald.
I do too.
I like him a lot. Reginald's got a very good energy about him.
You
know it immediately when you meet him and talk to him or when you hear him on the radio.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about those two.
I am
forming
too.
A long-lasting relationship.
Yes,
hopefully.
Yes. Yeah, John Lopez, Reginald Atatula, and Figgy Fig as well. Tua Tagovailoa. He was not very fond of his Brian Flores combo.
No,
that was not an in-the-loop situation.
Brian Flores doesn't sound like Reginald whatsoever.
Not at all.
No.
He's the bizarro Reginald Atatula.
Yeah.
Brian Flores. Here was Tua Tagovailoa on the Dan Le Batard show talking about his 2 years with Brian Flores as his head coach. This sounds miserable.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate, you are the best whatever, you are this, you are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad, and you hear it more and more, you start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear or that you probably shouldn't be hearing. You're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year.
Oh, name names.
Name it.
Name names.
I wonder,
who else?
You know what I didn't catch the first time I listened to it was, okay, he was a bit off on the president of the United States. If there's one thing presidents of the United States hear, it's never anything negative about anything at all. You know, like, that's, honestly, though, that might be a good analogy in that, I think that Tua certainly is not a guy who has the character or doesn't have the makeup to be a president or a politician.
Correct.
Because there will be really negative things said about you.
You got to let that bounce off
to an extreme degree. Yeah. And yeah, some people have the capability of letting it bounce off of them. I think without knowing Brian Flores' side of the story, I think that it's reasonable to think that maybe Brian Flores, at the very least, misjudged how he needed to handle his quarterback. Because some guys can handle that, and some guys can't. Some guys thrive off of that kind of coaching. Like, they get a chip on their shoulder, and they're going to prove you wrong. But you got to you got to know who you're dealing with. And I think it can be a combination of two things. Is Tua maybe more sensitive than your average starting Pro Bowl quarterback?
Yes.
You very well might be.
Yes, I think so.
But, like, as the coach, it is what it is. You know, you got to, you're not going to all of a sudden turn that dude into Tom Brady in terms of his makeup by treating him the way Tom Brady could be treated. And so I think that's probably the biggest indicator. So I think if you want to come out of that thinking that Tua's soft, I think you could come up with arguments for it. Or if you want to come out of it thinking like, man, Brian Flores just really misjudged the situation. He did not read the room when it came to all that.
Flores is a defensive coordinator in the league right now. He's the DC for the Minnesota Vikings. They do media availabilities.
Right.
Coordinators do. Do you think he gets asked about
this? Oh, yeah, 100%. I think
by the Minnesota media?
Yeah. I think they'll be like, do you care to respond to that or whatever? And he'll say the diplomatic thing.
If he's smart, he'll say whatever gets him in line to get another head coaching job.
If he's a radio producer, he'll dish. I'll tell you exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
I tried the nice guy thing with him. Mm-hmm. And so I have no idea what Brian Flores' side of it is. But yeah, I've got a friend who grew up real rough, like had a tough, like really abusive, you know, alcoholic father and everything. Mm-hmm. And my friend has thrived. He's done really well for it. But he's a really cool dude. He had siblings that did not do well at all. They've all got their own substance abuse issues and everything. And he's like, I just understand that. And he's like, he feels awful for his siblings, but he understands that for whatever reason, my friend was just, he had the kind of core personality that could withstand it, but not everybody does.
Yeah.
And it actually, he used it to kind of motivate him through life and everything. And so now when he's raising his own kids, he's very attuned to like, all right, I got to really learn who my kids are and what kind of discipline they need or respond to. And I think as a coach of a quarterback, a coach that manages kickers, like those positions especially, you got to listen more so than you dictate, because it's not, they're all different.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those stories that makes you, as a Texan fan, very thankful for the relationship, the positive relationship that clearly our head coach and our quarterback here have, D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud. They really... And I'll throw Bobby Slowick in there too. Like they really get along, and yet I think there's, especially with Slowick and C.J. Stroud, because neither guy shies away from talking about it publicly. Like they'll get into each other, you know. Like but it's in a very constructive kind of way. Ultimately, you're trying to do what's best to win football games. When I hear that Tua story, when we listened to it the first time, when we went to break, I'm thinking, what's the closest thing that the Texans have had to that kind of relationship that Tua and Flores had? And I guess the one, I don't think they've had anything that's in that same realm where there's a head coach that's just coming in every day and telling the quarterback how awful he was and things like that. Now, I do think the closest is probably Bill O'Brien and Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
Probably, right? Like it ultimately wound up something close to that.
I can't remember which one. What was the one story that Bill O'Brien had falsely imprisoned Brock Osweiler?
That was week 17. That was the last game of the season against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
Tom Savage had taken over as the starter at that point.
Yeah.
And Savage got knocked out of that game in the first half with some injury. And they went to the locker room at halftime. It was right before halftime. They went to the locker room at halftime, and Bill O'Brien reportedly was telling Brock, okay, you're in. He's like, now you want me to play.
Yeah, yeah.
And O'Brien's like, yeah, you're the backup quarterback.
That's the gig, man.
Right.
Yeah.
And Brock contended that O'Brien would not let him leave his office until
he agreed to it or something. It was all, I've heard different accounts of it, so I don't know exactly what happened. There was a confrontation.
Suffice it to say, Brock Osweiler, probably not a Bill O'Brien kind of guy.
Yeah, I do think the disease of New England is this. It's that because they were so successful, I think a lot of the people, not all of them, but a lot of them get raised up in that system, because that was the other thing that Belichick would do is he'd get them as pups, you know, and their first and only job, a lot of them, would be with the New England Patriots or other guys that maybe, obviously, their greatest success was when they were the Patriots, that they start thinking, they're like, okay, I just have to do everything the exact same way it is in New England. And it's not... That's not the way it works in the real world. And they get out into the real world, which is whichever team they're on, and they don't have that emotional intelligence to realize, like, all right, each team is different, and each player is different, each situation is different. We got to I gotta improvise. I gotta change a little bit. I gotta be malleable. And I don't know, maybe Flores is one of those guys who just thinks like, no, I'm gonna do it exactly like Bill did it.
Well, it's interesting too. What's interesting is O'Brien, like Deshaun Watson really liked playing for Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
You know, and I think and that's probably another reason why Miami and Flores were in on trying to get Deshaun to Miami.
Yeah.
You know, but they, history tells us Deshaun can he respond to that kind of coaching. Yeah.
And I think O'Brien, to his credit, was more of his own guy. You know, O'Brien had already been in a lot of other places before he went to New England. I don't think O'Brien was trying to emulate Bill Belichick. I think O'Brien is just a naturally grumpy dude.
Yeah.
You know.
And O'Brien, the first two starting quarterbacks, well, three if you count Mallett, but really, I'm thinking of Fitzy and Brian Hoyer.
Yeah,
both like that style. Fitzy said he advanced most as a player under Bill O'Brien.
But a lot of that's not necessarily about the personality. That was about the education.
Yeah,
what O'Brien would try to install, and this was a little bit of the disease of New England, is thinking that you're going to be able to get anybody to play mentally the same way that Tom Brady does.
Yeah,
and you know, I've always said it. Tom Brady's.
He's ruined franchises.
His football IQ, it's like running a 4-1-40.
Yeah.
So when you try to start getting guys to play the game like Tom Brady, it's like asking Jalen Petrie to run a 4-1-40.
Yep.
Like, no, it's different.
It's
a different deal.
Yep. Look who's here. In the loop.
Look who's here.
We're used to seeing you, John Lopez.
I am here.
Welcome aboard, Reginald Atatula.
I appreciate it.
He's been here already, Sean.
Huh?
He's already been here.
But I haven't had a chance to say it. I haven't had a chance to say it publicly on the air. I've texted him, and we've had breakfast before, but now I get to do it in front of the cameras, in front of the audience. Man, you guys sounded good yesterday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Man. It seemed like the Houstonians listening were very welcoming, so I appreciate that from all the listeners.
We're known for our hospitality and weather events.
That's right, I've gotten a good feel of both of those over the last 3 days.
Do you get the sense that it helped you that you have roots here in Houston with
for sure.
audience?
100%.
Yeah. I mean, you're a very likable individual unto itself, but probably like having...
I'll let you tell me.
Having those Houston roots, I can tell you, you're a very likable individual. What was the worst moving story that you got yesterday? I like that thread going throughout the show yesterday.
Yeah, I was personally flabbergasted, I guess because I just hadn't considered enough, that people just steal trucks, right? Like I didn't think about it. Like, you're moving, you're worried about getting your stuff up, and I never thought about, people just will run up and take your truck.
From anywhere. Everything, you're protected by your zip code.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When I was thinking about this, I don't have a moving story, like an individual move like that, where, you know, all the movers had BO, or they stole a truck, or whatever. Like, my moving story, probably a little darker than that. back when things weren't going very well with me and my ex-wife back in Chicago, back in the early 2000s, we did a thing where while we were in counseling, the therapist suggested, like, well, why don't you guys have your house? And our kids didn't really know there was stuff going on at that point.
Yeah,
like, why don't you get a second place? And then one of you, like, once the kids go to bed, the other one can go there, and you don't have to stay in the same house.
Who was the counselor?
Okay, so we had to move, you know, so I had to move some stuff over to a second place over there where, you know, one of us would go sleep there at night and then come back in the morning. Like, this.
You actually did it?
It's a horrible arrangement.
You actually
I was never been through a divorce before. I'm like, all right. So these movers show up to move, like, two rooms worth of stuff to this house that's, like, 8 minutes away, right, in Naperville. So these movers show up and they move us over there. So that lasted about 3 months, and I called back up three men in a truck or whoever they were.
Mm-hmm.
Same mover shows up to move us back there.
Oh,
or
Lord.
Move me back
you
there.
Gave back into the stories. House.
Then later, back to the house. So same mover shows
really
up.
Giving then it the
then
effort.
We sell our house while we're in the middle going through the divorce. Guess which mover shows
same
up?
Same one.
Same movers show up. Then I finally say, all right, well, I got to move back to, I'm moving to Houston. I call three men in a truck. Who shows up?
Again?
Same mover. This guy knew more about how bad the marriage was than than probably any of our relatives
did. You still
get
Christmas
cards from him. It's unbelievable. He's like,
it's going okay.
The guy shows up, he gets out of the truck, he's like, you again? What the hell?
Did he pick sides in the divorce? Was he like, guys, are you still friends with him? Or
No.
I think Sean lost him in the divorce.
No. Yeah. I did. My wife got custody of the mover. So that was,
it's a great ironic twist if she ends up marrying the mover. That was helping.
Oh, wow.
Well, at least then you'd understand why he kept showing up to the house.
That's true, exactly. I guess it wouldn't be all that ironic.
It's just, man, that guy kept showing up, and I'm like, oh, man, Man, you again.
That wasn't a coincidence. I'm with Reggie on this one. Okay. There was probably something going on.
Okay. He wasn't a neighbor that was helping move. He was an actual mover of the company.
That way four it's more times, ambiguous. Sean,
four times?
He saw an opportunity.
Yeah, maybe. Gentlemen, what's going on the show today?
Oh, man, we're super excited about the Astros walk-off. And we're going to ask who you think is on the hot seat for these Texans, because there was a very interesting perspective from ESPN.
Yeah, we were, man, a lot of these injured guys, man, people are putting them in pen for the roster. I don't know about all that.
Yeah.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh,